The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Do you know what the music means, Mr. Sweeney?
We're back.
We are back. It's time to talk sports tonight. We got a double dose of Sweeney and the Wise on WGBB Sports Talk 1240 coming at you. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. And the Jets, despite the common belief between the two of us that they won't make the playoffs, find themselves two games out of a playoff spot after taking down the free-falling Kansas City Chiefs today.
And they are free-falling. They can't beat anybody.
To 31.
The Jets looked actually good. Their defense looked horrible, but here we go.
How about that, huh?
Four games left. Can we do it?
Think about this. Before the season started, nobody expected anything out of the Jets.
No. They were actually predicted to get the top three pick in the league.
2-3 wins?
Yeah. They said, hey, the Jets are going to grab 1, 2, or 3 in the league. They're talking all these quarterbacks they're going to be drafting.
Me and you were hoping that they would get the first overall pick.
Yes.
The big prospect from the summertime coming into the current college football season was Sam Darnold from USC. Didn't have a dominant season. But before the season, that's what we wanted them to do. We wanted to tank and get him possibly. However, now, with all the quarterbacks in the league coming out, it doesn't really matter. And I guess, you know, at first, you would have thought we'd be really disgusted with the fact that we're not fighting for that first overall pick. But at this point, watching college football this year really doesn't matter. No college quarterback.
That kid Rosen doesn't look bad, though.
Was dominant enough for me to say, oh, I got to have this guy.
Right. I agree with you 100%.
The Jets are 5-7 and staring at a possible playoff spot, and yet they have blown so many games this year. I mean, think about it, John.
The Atlanta game in the rain, they should never lost. The Miami game, they're up by 2 touchdowns, knocked the quarterback out. What happens? Tell me what happened.
They find
that game.
A way to lose.
They blow that game.
And
the Patriot game, they were robbed. That was a highway robbery.
That game, they were up 14-0 early.
That was
the way they lost to Carolina last week.
Horrible.
On a fumble return for a touchdown and then a punt return for a touchdown.
Carolina's not that good. They just stupid little mistakes the Jets are making. They could easily, instead of being 5-7, they easily could have had eight wins right now. And you know what, though? I'm going to tell you right now. They have a very, favorable schedule, as I say. They got Denver next week.
Denver stinks. They could go to Denver and win.
They could go.
I wouldn't put that past.
The Saints might be a tough game because the Saints could pass, just like Kansas City. But the Jets
the
can
Saints
pass,
have a very good year. I mean, there's a team that, Drew Brees is still slinging it around. And they do play defense, and they can run the ball. I mean, they really can run the ball this year, right?
They can run. They got that kid Kamara and the other running back, 22 over there, Ingram.
Mark Ingram's had a decent season.
And they got this young kid Kamara. He's a freaking stud. Then they go to the Chargers, and then they finish up with the New England Patriots, the last game of the season.
That's a tough schedule, though.
The Packers.
I don't know why you think that's favorable. Outside of playing Denver. I mean, New Orleans is tough.
The Chargers
got hot at the right time.
Yeah, they were 0-4, started the season 0-4.
That AFC West, they're tied for first. They can win that division now, which I really think they're going to win.
6-6.
Because they play defense, and Philip Rivers, he knows how to win. He's still slinging the ball around. They got a decent running back with Melvin Gordon. At this point, the way they've played the last 5-6 weeks, I'd be surprised if the Chargers don't win that division now.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if it comes down to New England for Pittsburgh, for home field throughout the playoffs, and the Jets upset New England, and Pittsburgh ends up getting that home field throughout it.
I don't know if that would make me feel good.
It would make me feel good. That's probably actually my Super Bowl.
The Pats have dominated for almost 20 years now.
It's disgusting.
And in this conference that reeks mediocrity, I mean, the only two good teams right now are
Pittsburgh
and New England. But I asked you, too, and if anybody out there knows, I don't recall, since Brady took over, I don't recall Pittsburgh ever beating them in the playoffs. And like I told you on the ride in, at least the Jets beat the Pats in a playoff game in 2010.
Yeah.
At least the Ravens have knocked them off in the playoffs. Even Peyton Manning finally got the monkey off his back and knocked them off before he won a Super Bowl. So
yes, The thing is with Baltimore, Baltimore's got a great defense.
Right.
Their offense stinks. I mean, they exploded for 40-something points today, but their offense is horrible.
Yeah.
No, but they got a good defense. But, you know, they're another team that's right there. They're right there on the – it's going to be tough. They're probably, you know, we'll see. We still got four games left. The Jets, look, I'm not counting anything out of the Jets because just like today, they're going to Kansas City. They put up a lot of points.
Right.
McGowan's playing better than we thought, right?
McGowan had a good season. I have no issues with the way he's played this year. My only issue is he's 38. So no matter, how,
gonna see
no matter how good he plays, he's going to be 39 next year.
All right, so if the Jets go into Denver, they beat the hell out of Denver next week.
And Fitzpatrick had a great year his first year with the Jets also.
But he this is my question to you.
Broke a team record, and then look what happened him in year two.
All right, so McGowan's not going to be here next year. He's 38 years old. He's done, right? When are they putting the rookies in, one of the rookies in?
I don't know. They're in a playoff race. They're in a playoff race, technically. They're not going to replace him right now. And to be honest with you, I mean, I doubt if they really even care if they get a look at Hackenberg.
Yeah. He was inactive again today.
And Petty,
they saw
plenty of last year. So you think they really need to look at him right now?
Probably
not. When they're officially eliminated, they'll probably let him start the last game or so if that's the case.
I think it's going to come down to week 16, something. That's where it's going to be right there.
The opposite of what the Giants went through. I mean, listen, we're used to the Jets embarrassing themselves or being the butt of jokes and all that in the NFL. But the Giants, they may have reached a complete low point this year.
They're
not only with their record coming into the season with expectations of competing for Super Bowl, and not only being at 2-9 before today, but this whole thing that went on this week with Eli Manning and benching him to put Geno Smith in at quarterback.
I just don't get it. If you're going to bench Eli Manning, I'll just bring it shortly. It's been talked about shortly on this one. If you're going to bench Manning,
right?
Is Geno the answer for next year, or what's this kid Webb? Everyone's talking. Why isn't Webb wasn't even ready? He's not even ready to play today.
Right.
He would have been the guy to put into this game, but he wasn't ready. So why do this to Geno?
I don't know.
Break his streak at 210.
Right.
I mean, you know, whatever. The guy's been more durable. 210 games he hasn't missed. Football's a violent sport. You and me both know that. That's a pretty good record right there. And Eli, the guy puts out every game. I'm not saying, you know, the guy's a Hall of Famer.
He's never missed a game.
Never missed a game. And he puts up numbers every game. He's got nothing to work with there.
No offensive line. When he came into the league, I thought he'd be above average at best. I remember arguing with my partner at work. I thought Pennington was going to have a much better career than his. I thought he was a much smarter quarterback, which he was. But Chad Pennington was the complete opposite in terms of durability. He couldn't keep from getting hurt.
Eli Manning,
now he had a better offensive line, especially the years when he won the Super Bowl.
Of course he did, yeah.
But he was getting smacked around from year one. I saw him just get up off the turf every time.
Not
say a
word.
Back in the huddle. Keep playing. Carried himself with class. His entire career, and a performer, over 50,000 yards passing.
330-something
touchdowns. Over 300 touchdown passes.
Hall of Fame.
You know what my big issue with this was? Was that you were ending the streak to put Geno Smith in.
If he didn't have the streak going,
nobody would care that he was being sat down to see a backup or a brand-new quarterback like Webb.
But Webb wasn't even ready. So why?
Now, listen, you could say, you know, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he says, well, I'm not going to catch Brett Favre. But that's not the point. You intentionally broke his consecutive game streak to put Geno Smith in.
Like I said, is Geno the answer for next year?
As a coach, you could have just not said a word. And then if you're getting blown out at the half against...
You put Geno in.
You say, listen.
Let's see what we got.
Listen, Eli, I'm going to sit you down. I'm just going to take a look at this quarterback in the second half. We're 2-9. No big deal. And the thing that gets me, I don't know how long he was with Green Bay, but McAdoo was with Green Bay at one point. And let me just say this much. When Aaron Rodgers got drafted into the NFL in 2005, the Packers were horrible that year. They were one of the worst teams in the NFL. They finished 4-12.
I know exactly where you're going.
One of the worst teams in the NFL. The next year, Rodgers' second year, they were 8-8 team. They were average to below average team. They finished at 8-8. They weren't they were not in playoff contention in December. They weren't. I know that factually because the year that Favre was with the Jets was the only year that he was in a playoff race and failed to make the playoffs. All right? And then the third year that Aaron Rodgers was with the Packers, he didn't start at all.
Nope.
And Favre went to the championship game and lost to Eli Manning. Now, if Eli Manning didn't beat him,
in the cold,
would Rodgers have ever played for them? Because let me just say this much. He never got a start in those first 3 years.
Never.
And I guarantee you, especially the first year, it had everything to do with Brett Favre's
and his record, of course.
So
of course
don't tell me that McAdoo wasn't conscious of this. Why would you intentionally break the guy's streak? It made no sense, especially if like what I'm seeing and reading today, that he might be fired tomorrow or tonight.
That's what they said.
Then why, as an owner, would you let him sit your quarterback then, if that's the case?
I think the owner didn't realize it was going to go down like that. Mara, they got to get on the ball here. It's too late now. It's over. But I'm just saying. And Geno didn't look like he was anything spectacular. Two fumbles today. I mean, look, you know what? He was scrambling around. The offensive line of the Giants stinks. You know,
they do.
They have no running
but
game.
But they've probably reached one of the low points in their franchise history.
So it's amazing.
They really have.
Because we've seen Super Bowls. How many Super Bowls?
They've won four Super Bowls since I've been watching football. In the last 40 years, the Giants have won
twice.
Four. Two with Parcells
and
two with Tom Coughlin, right?
You know the Giants.
And before the NFL merger, they won four titles. Also, they have eight titles in their team history. Yes.
See, my thing is now, like Eli's out this year. They're saying right now, his father said today he might retire at the end of the season. This and that. I think Eli's got a lot of game left. They should look at a team like Jacksonville.
Why? They got Blake Bortles, though, man. They're fighting for first place. See, a lot of people bring that up just because of Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, but you know what, though? That offense isn't... Yeah, right. They're the defense.
So you're telling me you're going to put aside...
The running game on that team.
But Bortles is 8-4 right now with Jacksonville. Right. So they might win the division. Who knows what they do in the first round of soda players? You're telling me you're going to take a 25-year-old...
You're telling me Bortles is tearing it up?
Hold on. I'm not saying he's tearing it up. He's 25 years old. You're telling me you're going to take your current franchise quarterback and put him aside to put in a 37-year-old quarterback? That wouldn't make any sense.
That's won two Super Bowls before, and the MVP.
I understand the natural thought of Jacksonville because of Tom Coughlin, but I actually think, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I actually think that a better fit for him would be to go to a team that doesn't have a quarterback, period. Someone like Arizona. It would be very easy for Arizona to cast Carson Palmer aside to put Eli Manning in. That would be much easier to do.
We're talking next year.
If he leaves,
right. Yes,
and
goes
somewhere else next year.
You're right, because Palmer's at the end of the...
I don't know what he's
going to do. Carson Palmer, well, let's admit it right now, he's at the end of his
career. But I would just think you would look for a situation like that if you want to go somewhere and start the next two or three seasons before you retire. That's all.
Because I can't see anywhere else where you like... I mean, there are probably other teams, but most of the teams have young quarterbacks. Yeah, right. I mean,
Arizona is
a good fit.
There's a lot of young quarterbacks coming out this year. You know, Sam Darnold might stay at USC now, knowing what he did this year as a quarterback, which wasn't anything spectacular. He's not going to be up for the Heisman. Not like Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma. Now, if the Jets took someone like that in the draft, I wouldn't have a problem. I actually might lean more towards Louisville's quarterback, Lamar Jackson, who won the Heisman last year.
What about Rosen?
Because Lamar Jackson might be the next, like, Randall Cunningham type. I might take a shot with someone like that, especially when you see how teams are running their offenses with Russell Wilson in Seattle, Cam Newton down in Carolina, Dak Prescott with Dallas. So Lamar Jackson might be, you know, that next Randall Cunningham guy that can scramble because he's a great running quarterback and he can throw the ball also. And he's growing into his body. He's tall and he's lean. Still has room to build within his frame. But I don't know what's going to go on because I don't really think any quarterback stepped to the forefront. I think Baker Mayfield might win.
Might. Yeah.
The Heisman. He has a good shot at it.
Very good shot.
I don't know when they do the voting, but I know his team is in the Final Four. I think we both agree that the teams that were selected for the college playoff, Clemson's going to play Alabama.
I love it. I love
Clemson. And Oklahoma's going to play Georgia, who might have a chance to do something that they haven't done since Herschel Walker was there, which is win a national title. That was back in like 1980.
That would be great.
So, I mean,
I would love to see
a lot
Georgia
of in Georgia right now.
Georgia and Clemson. That would be great. Championship game. That would be awesome. I think Clemson's got a really good team this year.
Or imagine if Georgia plays Alabama, an SEC matchup for the national title.
Look, you know what? All those matchups, every one of them.
Because they didn't play this year in the regular season.
Yeah. Every one of them, I think it'll be a good game.
But I don't disagree with
two good games.
I don't disagree with Ohio State being out. They got blown out by Iowa by 30 plus points. I have no problem with two losses. They're out, and Wisconsin blew their shot last night.
Yes,
they needed to shut Ohio State down. They had a weaker schedule when people measured it up, and they lost, so they didn't go undefeated, and they lost their title game for the Big Ten. And Auburn, listen, they finished with three losses. They had a chance because they knocked off Alabama, but they definitely had to beat Georgia.
But they lost. They looked, and they lost to. They, didn't Auburn lose to the?
They lost to Auburn and, to like LSU.
Yeah.
So.
You're right. Hey, look, you know, like I said, both of those games are going to be good games, and the championship game is going to be a great game. I'm looking for Clemson myself. I think they got the back-to-back.
Right.
Back-to-back.
So now think about this in terms of us being diehard Jet fans. Before the season, we thought one or two wins. Let's hope we're that bad where we get Sam Darnold. Now Sam Darnold looks like he needs another year of college, possibly.
Right.
Or if he comes back, he might not be the first overall pick anyway because he didn't have a dominant season. Great skill set. I like his potential as an NFL quarterback, but he's still young. He's only played 2 years of college football as a starter. And now we're sitting here on December 3rd, and we really don't care what the Jets do the rest of the way because anywhere in the first round you'd be able to draft a quarterback.
Of course,
it really just depends on combine testing with the quarterbacks.
Right.
You know, and interviews with team personnel and with how they finish up in their bowl games and how scouting and evaluations go because there is no quarterback that's a surefire franchise guy coming in. And the closest thing right now, based on what I saw this year, is Baker Mayfield out of Oklahoma. And I just think in the back of my head, from having watched him play, because he had a much better team last year to work with at Louisville,
right.
I think Lamar Jackson would have a chance, the way NFL offenses are run today, would have a chance to be a marquee quarterback at the NFL level.
I'm still upset that we missed out on Watson, but that's another whole story. But you know what, though? I'm glad he I hope he has a fast recovery in Houston, and he's going to be a superstar, that kid. He's going to be something special in the NFL, right? I wanted Watson. We had him. We passed on him last year.
Yeah,
that would have been the guy.
I was there when he got hurt down.
That would have been the guy, though. But I'm happy for him. He's over there. He's another Clemson kid.
All right. So now here's the thing that I've been thinking about a little bit, because you got one of the worst seasons. I mean, the Jets have made it better because they overachieved with the roster they had, but the Giants are at a low point. They really are at a low point in their franchise history for a single season. So football in New York is pretty low right now.
Very, very low.
The morale. The city, the fans, it's down. It's down. And the season, pretty mediocre all throughout the league, right? The Knicks, yeah, maybe a little more exciting because they're, you know, but they're a 500 team. Can they fight for a 7th, 8th spot? Yeah, but they're fighting to see when they're going to lose in the playoffs, even if they get in. I mean, it's really about seeing if Golden State plays the Cavaliers in the finals again, isn't
it? Which they, you're right, exactly.
So now here's what I'm thinking, all right? First of all, I'll include the Devils because they play in the tri-state area. So you got the first chance in a long time for all three area teams to make the playoffs together. The last time they did it was 2007. In fact, 2007, that playoffs season, was the only time in the last 20-plus years that all three teams made the playoffs together. So you have a shot at that. But what could really juice up the spirits and the interest, and I'm talking outside the fan bases, getting the casual fan more involved, is if the Rangers and Islanders can find a way to finish 2-3 in the division.
So they can play each other in the playoffs.
And match up in the playoffs. They haven't played each other since 1994.
Be a long...
And they've only played twice in the last 33 years in the playoffs. 1990 and 1994. The Rangers won those two. The Islanders won the first 5 out of 6 playoff matchups.
94 was a tough one for me.
But only twice in the last 33 years have they faced each other. And I think if the casual fan or the young diehard fan of the Islanders or the Rangers were really going to get a taste of what it really was like in the 80s, you got to find a way to get that matchup.
Because you got to get that rivalry back again.
You need that.
Like it was when we were young.
You need that elevated passion to come to the forefront and maybe get, because I know a lot of players change teams year after year, but you need to try and, you know, I think the players understand the rivalry, but I think they understand what the fans go through more.
Yeah, you know
I
what?
Think you need that elevated hatred. And the only thing
you know
that would the hatred between the two teams would be to have them really go at it in a 7-game series.
You know what was great about that, though, also? We had the rivalry. The media was building up the rivalry. Plus, you had Baumgartner. You had Domi. You had Gillies back in
the
day.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Well,
in
the
80s,
then you're talking
you
about Gillies and Nystrom, and you're talking about Petit and Barry Beck, yeah.
You knew, and also then later on, then you knew something was going to happen.
Yeah.
You couldn't wait for the gloves to drop.
I mean,
the
Islanders,
see what happens. How much blood was going to be on the ice at the time?
I mean,
that's how much hatred
think about
was
this.
Between
the
these two
the Rangers and Islanders met 5 times.
It's not like that anymore.
In a 6-year period, they met 5 times. 79, and then the years 81 through 84. The Islanders beat them 4 years in a row after the Rangers beat them in 79.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is what really
irritates you.
Up and really elevated
this is
that
what
rivalry.
Keeps you awake at night.
Win the Stanley Cup, but the rivalry was still there.
Is this what keeps you up at night right now? That when you were a kid, that your childhood was destroyed because the Islanders won four cups in a row, 19 straight playoff games?
I never expected it.
Series? Excuse me.
I didn't expect it. The Islanders were a great team. They won that first cup against Philly. I didn't expect four in a row. That's what I was faced with during my elementary school days. I didn't realize I was going to be tortured like that.
Yeah, but you got a little back in 94.
It was exciting. They were a fun team to hate.
You got it back in 94.
With the hatred that I have for the Islanders from back then to maybe sometime in April or May this year. Who knows?
It's going to be interesting.
Let's welcome in AP sports writer for New York Hockey, Scott Charles. Scott, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about you guys?
How's it going, Scott?
Very good. Now, Scott, you cover both teams. Let's start with the Islanders first. You know, I everything really surrounds John Tavares. They got a young star in Barzal, and they got a big-time defenseman in Nick Leddy. But tell us what you've been watching these first, 2 months with this team.
Well, Barzal's really been blossoming before our eyes. And last year, it seems like it was the right decision to send him back to juniors to get stronger and to learn the game a little bit more. And he's really eased the pressure off John Tavares, providing a second line that can really produce a lot of offense. Him and Jordan Eberle have found a nice connection.
Right.
And I think that has really rounded out the lineup, so they have a strong offensive attack, and they're able to score goals at will, and it doesn't hurt that they can't lose at home. So with those things combined, let's say they have a good team, and they're in contention for the Metropolitan Division title right now.
Right,
very much.
They finally lost the regulation game against Ottawa the other night. High scoring affair, 1980s hockey, right?
6-5.
That is pretty impressive that a team that's still looking for a home for itself is the best home team in hockey.
Yeah, and this is. See what happens.
It's true, though, right?
Yes, yeah, I agree. Yeah. No news on Belmont, right? Nothing yet.
Yeah, no update as of now. You're just waiting on the state to decide on the RFP process. And once that happens, the ball will get rolling pretty quickly, but they're waiting on official word there.
So let me ask you, what's your opinion on that, if you had to take an educated guess on that? Do you think the Islanders are going to get that, or do you think it's going to go to that? Because I heard it's between them and the soccer. Do you think the Islanders have a shot?
Well, it sounds like the Islanders don't have another choice. If they don't get this, we don't really know where they're going to end up. They put all their eggs in this basket. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, is very supportive of the idea. John Ledecky, one of the co-owners, has been outspoken, and they think they've met all the requirements. So it's up to the state right now, and politics in New York have not been a friend of the Islanders in recent years, so we'll see how it shakes out. But it sounds like they're pretty confident they're going to win this.
Worst case scenario, if they do not get this, Belmont, this is devastating for me as an Islander fan, and also for the New York Islanders, because I think they're going to be, they'll be, because Brooklyn doesn't want them there.
It would be devastating if they don't get it, but it sounds like if they're optimistic about it, so I wouldn't be planning that part of the Islanders' future just yet.
Now, next step to my next question I want to ask you is about my main man, Johnny T. What is the no contract? I just don't understand. Like, if I'm Ledecky and Malcolm, I come out and say, here you go. I just offered John Tavares $11 million for 4 years or whatever they're going to offer him. They haven't even brought that up. I haven't even heard that. There's nothing going on. Will this guy go at the end of the year?
Well, you're not going to publicly shame John Tavares into signing with them. He's been very outspoken that he wants to remain an Islander. It sounds like he's waiting to see if any of this arena news could be locked up before he signs the contract. If I was Garth Snow and the Islanders, I would be very hesitant about the situation right now. I probably would have looked to move him over the summer just because what else are you going to do? If you don't sign him, that's a huge thing and a huge piece of your franchise walking away. That would be a disaster for them on the rink and off. So they must have some knowledge that they think he's going to sign, because otherwise it's a bit bizarre that nothing's been moving on that front.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think when the trade deadline comes up and the deadline's near, if nothing happens with this arena and nothing happens with Tavares, the owners and Garth Snow are going to be in a... Because what are you going to let Tavares go at the end of the year and just walk to another team? You're going to have to make a decision on what you're going to do. You're going to trade him or do something with him?
Yeah, well, my deadline would have been over the summer with him, because that would have got more value in a trade. But now it looks like they're going to just let it go. And, I mean, if they're in a playoff race, they're not going to trade him at the deadline. And that's where they are right now, and they're putting themselves in prime position to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. So it would be hard to move him at the deadline when you're in that spot. So they could move him before the draft if they get word he's not going to sign there. But they are pretty optimistic that things are going to fall into place with Belmont, and then once that's announced, then hopefully they'll sign Tavar.
Well, let's hope it's so. I hope so for the Islanders' sake. And now also the goaltending problem.
Well, hold on now. I want to finish up this topic since we're on John Tavares. Yeah. Now, Scott, you cover the team for quite a few years now. I mean, here's a guy. I know Anders Lee is doing fairly well. He plays on his line. I've seen what guys do when they leave the Islanders that played on Tavares' line. But he's doing a nice job, 30 goal season last year. He's more than on his way to that this year. Like you said, Barzal is going to be a Rookie of the Year consideration. But, I mean, Tavares is the face of the franchise. And he's playing without a contract, basically. I mean, don't you find that odd that new ownership let it get to this point? Like, he has all the leverage. If you're his agent, you have all the leverage when it comes to signing on that line. So what do you think is going to happen, or how do you feel about that right now, just covering the team?
Well, I don't know exactly, but just trying to connect the dots here, I don't think it's a money issue for Tavares. I think the Islanders are willing to pay the 8-year contract at $11, $12, $13 million a year, whatever, essentially whatever he wants.
Right.
I think it's more about Tavares wanting to wait on the arena issue to see what's going to happen, because if Belmont fails, which will probably be decided before he has to sign on that July 1st deadline, before he reaches free agency, then he might explore other options. But right now, he could be optimistic about Belmont working.
Okay, so now,
that's fair.
Let's say that decision on Belmont doesn't come until May or June. When the trade deadline comes up, do you just hold on to Tavares and risk him walking away? And
At this point, yes, because what would a playoff run be without Tavares right now?
It'd be nothing.
You know, the face of the franchise, top-line center, and one of the best in the NHL. That how could you do that? Your team's in first place or second place, and you're going to trade your best player at the deadline because you might not sign him. I think at that point you'd be better off. You're better off holding him for the rest of the season and just seeing where it goes at this point.
Right, I agree with that because they don't have very good goaltending. They score a ton of goals, but to me, I'm not saying it would be like 2014, but when he got hurt in the Olympics, they were doing fairly well, and then they fell off the face of the earth as a team and missed the playoffs. I think it would be debilitating without him. I think, you know, Josh Bailey's having a great season for the Islanders, but Josh Bailey is the only player in the top 40 scoring that has 5 goals or less. Without Tavares, he's no better than whatever Carl Pozo is doing in Buffalo. He's not a good time player without him. And Anders Lee might not be a 15 or 30 goal scorer, let's say at the end of a season, or a 15 goal scorer like he is now without Tavares on his line. That's just my assessment of it, and that's why I think Tavares has to be given whatever he wants at this point. And I agree with you, if he's not signed before the deadline and the decision doesn't come down in the arena, you have to hold on to him, because like you said, the playoff run, they don't come around a lot sometimes, and if they get in, he's going to be he's the man in that organization.
And plus, also, if the Islanders do go deep, but like you said, it's all up to Belmont.
Right.
If Belmont, they don't get Belmont, then I guess Tavares is gone. The Islanders are gone. Then it's over for me as a fan as well.
Right.
And I'd be devastated.
I guess not following the Islanders closely like you do, Scott. I just find it a little absurd that the owners would relate the two. Like I would make sure that my best player was signed and happy.
Well,
first and
foremost. He's not saying he's unhappy, so I don't know if that's a fair characterization. But
right.
He's probably just waiting. Like, if Belmont fails, then what is the Islanders' future? They don't have a plan B right now.
Right.
Gary Bettman said that as well. So without a plan B, he's going to say, plan A works, great. I'll sign on the dotted line after. If it doesn't work, then I have to really consider leaving.
I gotcha.
All right.
Let's hope that decision with Belmont comes down through the state pretty soon.
Yeah, well, let's get to the Islanders score a lot of goals. Let's talk about the goaltending situation, because unlike the 2014-15 season, where the Islanders started out hot and fell out of first place at the end, you know, Halak had a strong year that year. But this year, both goalies, you know, with their own troubles and struggles. So what's the story between the pipes with this team and how they're being handled?
Well, they entered the season with two goalies who are looked at as 1A options. And Greiss has really never been the starter. He took over last year and had a great year, but this, you know, his career record speaks for itself. I think they could be in the market during the trade deadline and around that area to improve their goaltending if this continues. Because right now they're outscoring opponents, and that's not a recipe for success, especially in the playoffs when the game slows down and tightens up with a little more clutching and grabbing.
Right.
So that's going to be a hard recipe to win with. But I think that the Islanders could be in the market unless Halak or Dreis improve over the next few months, which is possible. We've seen Halak in spurts act like a top goalie. When he's had some big runs, he's got it together for short periods of time. And that's really all you need in the NHL. You need a goalie to get hot for a few weeks, and that could propel you on a big playoff run.
No, I agree with you 100% with that. And to me, I don't know if they're 1A. I think we have two career backup goalies, like you said, with their career. Even Halak. I mean, Halak is good for a short distance. I just don't understand what Waite's doing, because he plays Dreis for 3-4 games, and then he puts Halak in there, and I guess without playing a lot, Halak let up a couple of goals, you know, 4 or 5 goals not too long ago. Then he went back. I just don't understand what he's doing with these two guys. So,
well, I would think Waite's position is, like, let's just try to find out who's a hot goalie. But there's no defined starter. If someone plays well, they should play the next game and the game after that, and that's what he's searching for. He's looking for lightning in a bottle with one of those, and then hopefully they can each get hot at different times to carry the team during different stretches.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Right.
Dreis is the one that got you the playoff series victory against Florida 2 years ago.
And he's younger.
I don't watch every game like you guys, but the games I've watched, I haven't noticed a big difference between one goalie or the other. I've seen them both play well, and I've seen them both get hammered sometimes. And I just think that's an issue, because when you look at the best team, Scott, right, when you look at Columbus, you know, look at their goalie. Bobrovsky is phenomenal.
Great, yeah.
When you look at L.A., oh, why is L.A. good again? Jonathan Quick's healthy. That's why. Jonathan Quick is the best goalie in the NHL. I don't care what anybody says. And when you look at Tampa, even though they got Stamkos and Kucherov, and they have scoring machines, and Hedman's an excellent defenseman, but between the pipes, the guy performs night in and night out. It's the same thing. And even the teams that might not be doing as well as they should, like Chicago, offensively, but you know what? Corey Crawford's having a great season. Yeah. These are teams with lockdown number one goalies. That's why, you know, from your perspective, and I like what I hear from you in terms of them maybe looking to upgrade between the pipes and the players, because you're not going to get anywhere without that big-time goalie, right?
Well, I don't think you necessarily need a top-of-the-line goalie. Look at Montreal with Carey Price.
Right.
He's well-regarded as probably the best goalie in the NHL, but right. They haven't really gone anywhere with him.
No.
So, you know, Corey Crawford's a good NHL goalie. Is he an elite, like, top five goalie? Probably not. So there are ways to get around it, but I think you need to have a solid player in net. And Halak could be that guy for a stretch. Like, he's not going to be that day in and day out, but he could give you 5 weeks of top-level goaltending. But I think when the trade deadline comes around, I really think they're going to be searching for areas to improve. And that's going to be an area that they're going to be able to take on, because Halak's contract expires at the end of the year,
right.
And they're going to look that way.
All right. Because, I know Halak, he had that phenomenal playoff run in 2010, almost got him to the cup. He lost to the Flyers, but he took out Pittsburgh and Washington. But career-wise, Dreis and Halak, basically more or less backup goalies.
Backup goalies, yeah. But I mean,
so it's interesting to hear, and I think what you're really telling us about maybe upgrading, and I understand you're not going to get a top-level number one goalie like I discussed, but I definitely agree with you in terms of maybe searching and bringing somebody in. You never know, but if they can get stronger between the pipes, that might be a shot to do something in the playoffs. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but you come back with us and we'll talk about the Rangers, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Do we have
right.
to?
Yes,
no,
we
I'm
have
kidding.
To.
I'm kidding with
it can't
you.
Always
kidding.
Be about
I'm
your
kidding.
Blue
I'm
and
kidding
orange Islanders. All right, folks, so listen, 631-888-8811 is the number to call. We're going to take a quick break, and then back with Scott Charles to talk a little Ranger hockey. The Blue Shirts, get ready for the Outdoor Classic. Back after this.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the contact us form. And let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Scott Charles, New York Sports Hockey AP writer. Scotty, logjam in the Metro. Just like in the Central with the Blackhawks and Dallas and all, but in the Metro, you know, you got whatever it is, seven teams that are above the 500 mark. The Rangers are at 30 points, but they're in sixth place. Now they had a real tough October, and responded with a strong November. Although they haven't played a lot of divisional games, what have you seen in your observations that concern or that you like?
Well, it seems like they really refined their defensive system from the beginning of the season to now. That they're not giving up as many grade-A opportunities. Lundqvist has played better, still not great. And right. The scoring has been hit or miss. When the team is clicking, they could score goals with the best of them. But they go into drought. They have these 1-2-goal games that with not a lot of shot attempts. They're just not generating enough opportunities. And that's one issue going forward, especially with Mika Zibanejad out of the lineup right now. That's something that they're going to have to monitor because they don't have a lot of center depth. They really only have 2 to 3 centers on the team to begin with, so that's an issue that was concerning heading into the season. I think you see that trickle down throughout the lineup in their play.
Now, with Mika Zibanejad, did they say he's going to be out for at least a week or two, or are they just taking it day-to-day? How are they going with that? I know it said out indefinitely, but have you had any other info provided to you?
He has not been placed on injured reserve yet, and he's got a concussion. So with concussions, I think no one ever really knows. It seems like he got it in a game, was reported to be fine, cleared all the tests and all that, played right. The next game, and then the day after had some issues. So, you know, they could be finicky, these concussions, and really never know until they're cleared. So it's not something I wouldn't expect them back in the lineup for that matchup versus Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, for the Rangers, because as they got stronger in November, the duo of Zibanejad and Buchnevich really took off. And so, you know, he missed a lot of time last year with a broken leg. Hopefully they monitor this and he doesn't miss any more than a week or so with the concussion. But Zibanejad, probably to this point, was probably their all-star, right, for this team?
He was one of them. I mean, Buchnevich was right up there. Brady Shea's had a nice year. Kevin Shattenkirk's helped the power play immensely.
Right.
But that Zibanejad was one of those players, and he was relied upon to be their top-line center. So that's a big issue.
My question is, with the one thing with the Rangers is, they had Talbot, they had Ranta. Hank's been hurt the last few years. When that guy, because he's getting up there in the age. When he goes down this year, I think the Rangers are going to be in a lot of trouble because they gave away two of their best backups right there. What do you think of that on the backup goalie situation?
Well, the Rangers believe that Benoit Allaire, their goaltending coach, could help improve any goalie, and they think they found someone at the right time in Andrei Pavlich, who used to play in Winnipeg and struggled last season mightily. But the way the schedule has broken, it's allowed Lundqvist to play most games because they haven't had too many back-to-backs yet. They've had a day or 2 days off between starts, so it hasn't been an issue. They are coming up. They have, I think, it's 6 games in 9 nights, something like that, coming up. So you're going to see Pavlich probably twice, and we'll see how he does. But the Rangers firmly believe that Allaire could help transform a goaltender and that Ronta and Talbot were just beneficiaries of his coaching, not necessarily the guys that...
Yeah, Scott, I'm not really worried about Lundqvist except for the fact that sometimes he'll get, you know, you get a little riled early in the game when he gives up a goal. He he feels he shouldn't give up. But like you said, the way the schedule maps out, he should just play as much as he can. Listen, he just tied Tony Esposito for wins with one franchise, you know, only 270 wins behind Brodeur. But that's because Brodeur played 70 games a year. Now, I'm not saying that that's what Hank should play, but Pavlik's going to get just with back-to-back sets that are coming up. He's going to get 11 to 12 other starts anyway, and it pretty much aligns where it doesn't matter how much Hank plays. He wants to play anyway. And even when he was rested that year when he had that weird neck injury, and Talbot came in and took him to the President's Cup, he was well rested. It really didn't matter. They still lost in the semifinals. So I really don't look. I don't think it matters if he plays 58, 59 games versus 67, 68 games. I think the more he plays, it's probably the better off for him anyway. Don't you feel that way watching him?
Well, you know, based on his recent career history, Lundqvist has played better when he's played more.
Right.
But, you know, with long playoff runs, you could get worn down by the end of it.
Yep.
And that's the issue with resting him now, and maybe you don't get the best Lundqvist, but then at the end during the playoffs, he's well rested. I mean, look at the Montreal series last year. He was the best goalie in the league for those seven games.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're right.
He won that series on his own.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
That was a great matchup with Price. It was a low-scoring series, and he played the way he needed to in order for this team to win a cup. But then again, you know, when they gave him, you know, plenty of goal support against Ottawa, he didn't come up with those magical saves, you know, and he blew third-period leads, and he wound up costing himself and the team. I mean, it's a team game, but he wound up being a big reason as to why they didn't beat a team that they outplayed. And they outplayed Ottawa in that second round.
Yeah, but they didn't necessarily outplay Montreal, which he won. So
right, which I give him full marks for, yes.
It's a double-edged sword there. But I think with Lundqvist, the more he plays, generally he plays better and gets into a rhythm. But how does that affect him in April, May, and in the playoffs? That's the issue. And that,
right.
You know, one thing they changed this year, Alain Vigneault in training camp usually gives a number of how many games they want Lundqvist to play. This year they did not give that number.
Yeah.
And they wanted to take it more on a day-to-day, week-to-week thing than a full season overlook.
Yep.
So that's changed this year, and we'll see how it plays out. You know, the beginning, it worked out. I think he's played 14 games in a row, something like that, and it's worked out because he's been able to get rest in between each game and all that.
Right. Even this week, he's got 3 days off before he plays Pittsburgh on Tuesday, which is great. And, you know, you mentioned it before. I don't worry about Hank because I think the number is going to be closer to 68 in terms of his games played this year. But the one thing I'm looking, and it actually, you know, Desjardins filled him pretty good with Buchnevich and Kreider, but you mentioned him before, Pavel Buchnevich. He's only 21, 22 years old. He's picked it up offensively, especially there in November. What do you expect to see from him going forward towards the holiday season and after the holidays?
Well, I think he's going to stay on that top line. He's looked really good. I mean, that game in Boston a couple of weeks ago, he made like a little start and stop move against the Dano Chara and just wiped the floor.
Right.
And he has an immense skill set. It's a tough adjustment for any Russian coming over that doesn't play on North American ice very well, doesn't speak the language, just assimilating into the culture. You know, it takes time, and this is now his second year in it. He speaks English a little bit better and can get by. Chris Kreider on his line could speak Russian, so that helps him as well.
Right.
But I think he's going to stay on that top line. He looks like a player in the top six forward for a while here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the kid can skate. I think if he gets the accuracy down, the other night he tried to go top shelf, glove side a couple of times, and he just, you know, shy over the net. Because sometimes he puts it up top, tucks it right under the crossbar. When he gets that accuracy down and starts firing that puck a little more, a little less playmaking like Zucco and a little more shooting, he's got one of those wicked wrist/snapshots. I think he's going to start putting more pucks in the net. So now, as with the other forwards, I mean, Zuccarello gives you the hard work all the time. Chris Kreider, when he's doing his thing, he's a good power forward. Is there anybody you're concerned with? I notice sometimes I find myself a little annoyed with the work ethic of a Jimmy Vesey, but is there anybody you've noticed that you think that they need to, you know, work on certain things, or they're just not up to par where they should be at this point?
Well, I think one player that stands out is JT Miller, and I think that's more adjusting to the center position than playing on the right side, which he prefers.
Right.
And I think that's really the issue for the Rangers going forward, is that they're missing a center. And I think that's really where, if they can acquire someone, I don't know what their next step is going to be. Centers don't grow on trees.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one wants to give them up when they have them. But when you look at that roster, it's Zibanejad, Kevin Hayes, and David Desharnais. And that's three centers, and one of them is a fourth-line center. So Miller's shifted to the middle, and that's changed the lineup. I think Kevin Hayes has had a really strong year so far. He looks a little bit faster, a little more confident, and I think him playing with Rick Nash, they formed like a nice little duo there, and he's becoming much more of an offensive threat.
Yeah, Hayes has he has possessed and handled the puck very well in the attacking zone. He's another guy. He's a good puck mover. He's got good vision. Sometimes he looks to make that one too many type of pass when he should shoot it. But yeah, he's done a really good job. He's been really strong on the puck. Rick Nash, hard worker. But I think every time you look at him, you just want to see more goals. But what about Michael Grabner? Right? Have you ever seen that where a guy had 13 goals and almost half his goals were empty netters? Isn't that something? I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, well, Grabner's played now 102 games with the Rangers and has 30 and has close to 40 goals, 30 goals, you know, 35 goals, something
right.
like that. It's quite amazing for him. Yeah, this season has 6 empty netters, and I think, you know, a large part is that he's a defensive forward with a lot of speed that creates breakaways. So when there's an empty net, it makes it a lot easier. But he's scoring goals, and it doesn't matter how, but they count. And he's providing secondary offense for them that they haven't had in the bottom six all season. So he's been an integral part of his team. And just making the team faster is a real big help. Now, one thing about Grabner, which Islanders fans know, is the missed breakaways.
Right.
Yes.
But, you know, one thing that I think goes not talked about as well, and it's a big thing, is that he's able to shift momentum. If your team is struggling and you're pinned in your own zone, he can all of a sudden get a breakaway. And even if he misses, that could still spark the team, like, oh, we just got a shot, maybe we'll get another one.
Right.
And I think if there are little subtle times during the games where some of those missed opportunities help jumpstart the offense, and I think that changes momentum in the Rangers' favor and allows them to climb out of a hole or climb out of a bad spurt there.
Right. He was snake bit in October. He had a lot of prime scoring chances and missed either a breakaway or a big setup in front of the net. But what I like about Michael Grabner, and it was – the best example actually was last game. Now, he had the hat trick because of the two empty netters. But if you think back to that first goal he scored in the game, after Desjardins got that fluke goal where the goalie misplayed it, he actually broke that puck out of the zone from his goal line and then took off up ice utilizing his speed, which I always say with him and Kreider, use your speed. He used his speed, got into that attacking zone. By time, Shattenkirk, you know, carried it up nice and slow, pulled up with his vision in the attacking zone, and floated that puck in front, and he just redirected it into the back of the net. That's the kind of thing that Grabner does, and the kind of thing I think that you notice in every game that really can have an effect on the team. Is that what you're trying to really talk about?
Yeah, I think, I'm looking at the Carolina game. Zuccarello had that or the game before the Carolina game, where he was just sprung up the boards and he just took off to the races. And even if he doesn't score, that changes momentum for a team that you just had a quality scoring chance. And that also opens up the ice for his other players, because those defensemen know on the other side, when Grabner's on the ice, he could take off in a second, so they're a little more hesitant. They don't always make that extra pinch in and allow the Rangers to come out of the zone. There are a lot of things that trickle down from his speed that have an impact on everyone else in the lineup.
Yeah. I tell you what, Scott, the only criticism I have of Grabner, and you can attest to this because you interview these guys in the locker room, and sometimes we cry, but more with Grabner, is that they're both physical monsters. But when you study these games and what they do shift to shift, Grabner, he doesn't take the body nearly as much as he should, and the kind of speed that these two guys generate, they should be, I'm not saying you should be out there just throwing the body nonstop recklessly, but a guy like Michael Grabner should certainly be throwing the body a lot more than he does. That's probably the only criticism I have of him.
Well, but it's twofold, that problem, because Grabner is so good with the stick, and he's so good at reading plays and intercepting passes.
Oh, yeah.
If he played with the body more, he's probably slowed up and unable to do those things.
Right. I'm just talking about certain spots, especially in the foreshore. But you're absolutely right in terms of his stick work. He is a bit of a magician in terms of, you know, penalty killing, disrupting passes, especially defense to defense. He picks them off, clears the puck. You're absolutely right about that, because I've noticed about that about him these first 2 years with the Rangers. So
and his teammates are the first ones to say it. If you look at the quotes after the game, Ryan McDonough said on Friday that he doesn't even cheat, and that's the thing about Grabner. He's never out of position, and he can still get those breakaways and change the flow of the game. So that's a big thing, that he's able to do this without coming out of position.
Right.
I'll tell you one thing. As an Islander fan, I miss Grabner, and he's having a phenomenal. The last 2 years, he's had a phenomenal year with the Rangers. He went to Toronto for that little blip there. I wish the Islanders would have kept him, actually, to tell you the truth, but it didn't work out. He's a nice guy, and he's in phenomenal shape. I want to ask you a question. We got a little thing going here with Letty and what's his name?
Well, I got to be honest with you, Scotty. In October, I don't know if there were two worse players in terms of their individual performance, especially with expectations of each guy, than McDonough and Shattenkirk. They had horrible Octobers. Shattenkirk started picking it up offensively. Still gets walked around occasionally, but he's been better defensively. And McDonough, he was strong coming off his injury. He's been strong, but neither guy has really excelled to what you need for this team to be successful. So those two guys versus Nick. I mean, Nick Letty's the only guy on that Islander squad that I would want on my team. But I think Nick Letty is in the New York area. He's probably the best defenseman all around. Do you think that or not?
I don't. I have this argument with one of my friends all the time.
Okay.
I don't think Nick Letty is in the same class as Ryan McDonough. I think McDonough
really?
Has had a really bad October, and he's been pretty brutal. He's had turnovers, some poor zone coverage. But
right.
You look at McDonough's all-around game and his body of work, he's really right up there as one of the best, most well-rounded defensemen. With Nick Letty, he's a great passer. He can transition the puck. I don't get the sense he's a top defenseman, but he's an excellent puck mover. And he can skate like the best of them. But I don't think they're in the same class. I think the better comparison to me is Nick Letty and Brady Shea, to be honest.
See Brady Shea, he's young, he's developing. I think he's gonna wind up being the best defenseman on the Rangers. He ain't there yet. But Letty, I tell you what, I've noticed about Letty, even coming from Chicago to the Islanders, every year the guy has improved his point production, and you brought up the speed factor. He's without question the best skating defenseman. On the Islanders, and probably the best skating. That guy, I saw him stride for stride with McDavid when they played Edmonton, and that's rare that a guy could stay with McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, Letty's a terrific skater. I think he's, him, McDonough, and Shea are probably very equal in that department, but I think there's more parts of the game.
Right.
And Letty is not as well-rounded. He's also a subtle, understated guy that leads to some of this, how you talk about him.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to take away anything from Nick Letty, but Ryan McDonough, to me, is one of the top defensemen in the league when his game is on. I mean, this year he's been struggling, but if you look at that Montreal series last year, McDonough was an absolute monster. And to play at that level, I don't think Nick Letty could get close to that. But on a day-in, day-out basis for a regular season, they're not that far off.
Because you're saying that McDonough takes the body and Letty doesn't? Is that what the... Because I think Letty's the best defenseman on our team, I believe.
On the Islanders?
Yes, sir, yeah.
Yeah, I would say that, for sure. But, comparing him to the Islanders, they are also a little short on defensemen there. I mean, Johnny Boychuk's definitely on the decline. He's had a nice, better year, but he's still struggling a bit. Calvin DeHaan's a good player, but, after that, who else you got back there?
Yeah, no, you know what else and I like Boychuk, but you know what is... With a guy with that kind of shot he has... He just doesn't score enough. He doesn't put enough on the net. I mean, he misses so much.
Not what you'd expect with that blistering shot. He's underachieved as an Islander, don't you think so, Scott?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
First year he came, him and Letty and Boychuk formed like a great pairing. That was the final year at the Coliseum. That was really the best team that I thought the Islanders have had the past few years. That was the real team that I thought could make a run at it if they got some trade deadline help.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't get the help, and they kind of faltered down the stretch. I think they had a really bad March after a brutal road trip there. But they that was their fastest team, most attacking. That was a scary team to play against night in, night out. I think that they've kind of tailed off since, and they've been a contender. They've been a playoff team in the playoff mix, but a real contender, I don't know. This year they've taken off, and they're doing well in the Metro right now. We'll see where it ends up. Well, it shakes out by the end of the season.
No, I agree. Right. Besides, I love the Islanders, and I'm a bit of a fan since I was a kid. But besides Tavares, I think they really do have a lot of players that overachieve to a level that makes them look better than they are on that team. There are a lot of overachievers. Barzal's,
they're a hard-working team.
They're a hard-working team.
Barzal's exciting, though. He is. He's an up-and-comer, hopefully, for them.
Well, as I said earlier, I think Barzal has alleviated a lot of the pressure and rounded out that lineup.
Yep.
But you look at Tavares, his job is to make his teammates better. So, when someone plays with Tavares, Anders Lee should be scoring a lot more goals than he would if he was playing with an average centerman. And Josh Bailey has been a threat. The past year and a half, he's really played with Lee and Tavares, and he's been much better up front.
Yeah, but now
you have that 1-2 punch with Barzal and Eberle on the second line. Yeah. You got Ladd still down the lineup. They're starting to round out their offensive lineup. Their goaltending is mediocre to average, and then you got their defense, which is which is capable of playing well, but they could use another body there.
Right, because Sonnenberg and those guys aren't going to, like, after Boychuk and Letty, what do you really have? I mean, you don't really have much.
Yeah, you could throw DeHaan in that mix. I'm not the biggest fan, but he's had a strong year and a half so far.
Right. And they want so far they've won the trade with Eberle and Strom, right? I don't think Strom's done too much with Edmonton. They're struggling anyway.
That's a 100% win.
They definitely won the trade. I'm not the biggest Jordan Eberle fan. He's very soft along the board.
Me neither. I'm not a big fan as either.
But the value of the trade was a really wise decision. Like, right. All you had to give up was Lidstrom and take on a little additional salary. So the value was there, and Eberle's a guy who could score. I just question the overall game and how it will work out. But,
right.
You know, there's no other way. They wouldn't have gotten anyone as talented as Jordan Eberle or any Storm if that wasn't the case.
Yep.
So
let me ask you about Hosang, what happened in the beginning of the year real quick with the weight, sending him back down again, sending him up again. Was that because he wasn't playing well, or that was because I know he went.
What's the story with him, Scott?
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on with Hosang.
Well, I think if I'm going back, I think he was sent down right after the Islanders-Rangers game a while back, and that was a game that Hosang had so many, you know, he had, I think it was 6 or 7 shifts that were over a minute long, and he just wasn't playing a team game, and I think it's just trying to get through to him to change his mindset out in the rink. It's all about him. He's an exciting player, an electric player, has tons of speed, loves to pass the puck. It's not that he's shooting, but he's got to play a 200-foot game. You got to be able to play in the neutral zone,
right,
make that extra pass, that touch pass to keep you going up ice and not turn the puck over. And that's what he's really got to learn. And that's been the knock on him his whole career, really, even going back to juniors. This was a guy that they talked about with talent that's to be a top-5 pick, and they ended up getting him at the end of the first round for this reason. And now it's a matter of if the Islanders can connect with him and kind of alter his mindset to be a little bit of a different player.
Because when he's on the ice, he's another one that flies all over the place. I just wish he would shoot a little more and pass a little more. He does. He is fast. I mean, he's another one he's got speed like Barzal has, and he can skate around. But I just think he needs. Look, I love the guy. I'm actually wearing his jersey.
You're
right
a fan
now.
Of his. You love him. That's fine. I want.
He's an entertaining player. He's fun to watch, and he'll catch your eye because he can do things on the rink that not many others
he's
can
young.
Do. But he needs to play a full rounded of a well balanced hockey game, and it's not just about that one rush when you get a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1.
Right.
It's about in the neutral zone. Are you able to stop a guy or make that little touch pass or, you know, do whatever to make sure your team is still playing well and not just scoring goals or letting up goals?
So let me ask you this question, because I know the Islanders missed the playoffs last year. If you had a crystal ball, you're looking at it now. What do you think of the Islanders' chances this year? I mean, they're right in the mix of things right now.
Well, more than a quarter through the season. What do you think the Islanders' playoff team or
I'll
not?
I'll say this. At the beginning of the season, I thought they were going to be on the outside looking in. But right now, they're not really in the mix, but they're above the mix. They're right at the top of the Metro, and that's a good place for them to be. They're going to have to keep this up. They're going to hit a lull at some point. But we'll see how they continue. I think right now, you have to think they're going to be a playoff team, because they probably have the best chance or the second best chance of winning the Metro as of now. I don't think the Devils are going to stay up there all season.
I agree with you.
Columbus is a real good team. Pittsburgh and Washington will eventually figure it out. The question is, will it be too little too late, or will they just not push for the division because Pittsburgh's an experienced playoff team for sure.
Right, yeah. Back-to-back cups, so we know.
Let's hope it doesn't happen this
year. All right,
year.
Last two questions, Scott, both on the Rangers. First things first, you talked about you don't like the softness along the boards with a guy like Eberle. Do you think that the return of Jesper Fast after being out early in the year, you think that's been part of the turnaround for them in November, or you think it's just coincidence?
I think I would love to give him credit because I think he's a good player and does everything right, but I think that's more of a coincidence than anything.
Yeah, but his forechecking helps with that bottom, you know, that fourth line.
Oh, for sure, and he's a penalty killer, which helped turn around. He does a lot of things right, but is he going to make the difference between, you know, when they start 2-7-3, something
right.
like that?
Yep.
He's not going to change that to their 11-3 in their last 14.
No, I got you. All right, and last thing, listen, the Rangers have 3 divisional wins so far this year, and 2 of them against Carolina. So now they're coming up with Pittsburgh, Washington, and the Devils. Big week for the Rangers or not?
Meaning a successful week?
To me, it's a big week for them in terms of, like, I personally feel they need to get two out of these three.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if they get 3 points on the on this couple of games, like, that's not the end of the world. But
right.
It would show me something. If they go, like, 3-0, that would show me something about the team.
Yep. All right, my man.
Scott, thank you very much. Let's hopefully Islanders do something in the trade deadline, maybe get a goalie or something like that, or...
Let's hope they upgrade around Tavares for you and your sake in the playoff
hopes.
But, Scotty, I want to thank you for spending the better part of this hour with us. We really do appreciate the knowledge you bring to the table for New York hockey. And like I told my partner, I think if they can find a way to match up in the playoffs, the Rangers and the Islanders, they can find their way into that 2-3 spot or somehow match up. I think that with football being down and basketball being eh, I just think that they could, you know, help get the casual fan really involved in hockey. And
would be good for
the
city, for sure.
I think so.
See that.
Yeah. All right, so thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. Thank
and,
you very much.
Have a great holiday season, okay, buddy?
All right, thanks. You guys, too. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back after the break, SiriusXM radio personality and Major League Baseball official scorer Howie Carpenter is going to join us in the next hour, and we're going to talk a little bit of hockey in the beginning because he's got a book coming out, but we're going to talk about baseball and the Hall of Fame vote that's coming up.
Here we go.
And what we think about certain guys that are eligible and certain guys that have been on the ballot. So stay tuned. We got a lot of baseball talk coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Back after this.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.